the importance of brokenness. I would like to talk a few moments about the application of brokenness. I think I'll change the order here. Let me speak first of the way of brokenness, and then we'll talk of the application. Go to the book of Jeremiah, if you would. Jeremiah in chapter 18. The way of brokenness. And the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause you to hear my words." So Jeremiah says, "I went down to the potter's house." You know, an unbroken man would have said, "Lord, now why do you want me to go down?" Jeremiah didn't ask why. The Lord wanted him to go down. He just went down. Well, amazing, as I read through the book of Jeremiah, that principle always keeps leaping off the page to me. Jeremiah, strip yourself down and put on a loincloth and walk over to the river and then bury that loincloth in the mud. Well, Lord, what do you want to do? He didn't ask that. He just went and obeyed. Just obeyed. So he goes down to the potter's house, and there he was making something at the wheel. And the vessel that he made was of clay. Or the vessel that he made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. So he made it again into another vessel as it seemed good to the potter to make. The pictures here, the potter is the picture of God. The wheel here is a picture of the sovereign hand of God working in the affairs of man, but also the sovereign hand of God working in the affairs of the vessel. So we see a sovereign God, a sovereign potter, working at the wheel. The vessel that he made of clay, the vessel that he made of clay was marred. You see, beloved, this picture here in your life, as you said here in life, this wheel, like unto Satan, it made of you a vessel. It determined what you trusted in. It determined the way you think about life. It determined the way you see life. It determined how you see yourself. It determined how you see God. And God is not in the least bit concerned about taking this vessel here and putting it up. And God understands that vessel needs to be marred. In the New Testament, Scriptures are clear. In James, it speaks about man's part in this issue. Humble thyself. That you have a part in the matter of at least being available to God to be humble. In Romans, in chapter 12, it says there, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto the Lord." I used to think my part in that verse was to be holy, to be acceptable, to be a living sacrifice. And I come to understand that's not my work, that's God. Mine is a presentation. "I beseech you that ye present, and that if I present myself to God, He will make me a living sacrifice." Do you hear that? Brokenness. He will make me holy. He will make me acceptable in His sight. A presentation. I think it's in Proverbs in chapter 17 that it says, "If we will commit our works unto the Lord, He will establish our very thinking." If we will commit, that's our job to commit. Psalm 37 says, "Commit thy way unto the Lord, and He will" what? "He will bring it to pass." So as we begin to think about the way unto brokenness, step number one in the way unto brokenness is by faith present yourself to God to be marred. Present yourself to the potter to be marred by faith. A.W. Tozer said that he's never known a man used of God that God didn't first crush. I've watched it in my own life, and I've watched it in the ministry in which I've been in. I've watched the young men. I have watched the young ladies. And I've watched them as they've given themselves to God. I have watched the process of God's marring. It's never the same in anyone's life, but yet it's there and present. The dear young man, he's Thai Lao. He's 30 years old now. At the age of 12, I watched this little boy surrender his life for salvation. When he surrendered and I prayed with him, as I was kneeling and praying, God said, I want you to keep your mouth shut, but this young man will be a great anointed preacher of the gospel. The young man grew on up through junior high. We gave him a scholarship. I gave him a scholarship to a school and put him under some of my own tutorship and discipleship. And as he grew up, as he got into the eighth grade, I remember that night when he came and he said, Lord, I give my life to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. In my discipleship, I began to teach him that he could trust God. Grace is a safe place. Commit your life to God to be made a broken man, a broken vessel. He went on in his high school years to win the preacher's contest of the state of Tennessee, and then on to Bob Jones to win the National Preacher Boys contest. But before he went, that first year that he was to go, he did not go. He came in my office and he said, Brother Al, I cannot go. I said, why, John, can you not go? He said, I'm being tempted to pride in my own heart. I think it would be better that I stayed at home. He went back and God gave him the freedom to go the next year, and he stood up and he preached. He said, I really don't care about this contest. I just want to preach the Word of God. And he preached with such an anointing that the judges fell under conviction. And I've watched God work through his life. 2 weeks ago, we buried his wife for 5 years. Died of cancer. Just before he was ready, it was January 16th of 1993, he was to leave to Thailand and Laos to start a missions project out of our ministry. 3 days before he left, Patsalin went to get her final health checkup, and in the health checkup they said, you've got cancer. And there again, he had to lay down his ministry, lay down the passion of his heart, the love of his life, his wife. He had to lay her down and put her on the altar. And I've watched him the last 2 years walk through that, and I watched her die in his arms a few weeks ago and rejoicing about going to heaven. And even though he was grieving and hurting, he said, oh God, I'm thine and thine alone. He presented himself to God, but he knew in his presentation that God, what God wanted to do, he wanted to mar that vessel. Let God be God. Don't be afraid. You know, I have a dear wife and I have 3 children, but I am not afraid. They are God and not mine. They are not my source. God is. Thank God that he's given me my wife, but he chooses to take her away. Christ is enough. Someone asked me, Brother Al, what do you believe to be the greatest teaching of all the Bible? And I said, well, apart from salvation, Christ is all and in all. Christ is all. So it's a presentation by faith. Secondly, I want to say that in this way of brokenness, it is a work of God, not a work of man. It is a work of God. Notice in Jeremiah in chapter 18. Let them sit real quick and get it down. And I appreciate it, brother. I don't know if these are emergency, put them up, but if not, maybe they could wait. But it's secondly a work of God. It's not your work. I believe that brokenness is an initial work. It has its beginning, but it is a lifetime process. I could sit for the next hours and share the different areas of brokenness and times of brokenness in my own life. I remember that initial brokenness. I was just a layman in the church. We looked to be a good, fine young couple in the church, and everyone would have thought we had the best marriage. And then God began to deal with me about what a sorry husband I was. And I began to acknowledge that before the Lord, confess that sin, and I began to deal with the confession of sin. And we had a youth group there, and in that youth group there were just two or three teenagers, and the church asked me, would I lead that youth group? And in a matter of about 9 months, in a little Bible study group from two or three to about 140 young people. And the only thing I had learned about this whole issue was the issue of confession of sin and humbling yourself before God. I didn't know anything else that I was teaching these young people. And on a specific night in August of that year, we had a campfire kind of meeting. And that night the invitation was given at 8 o'clock. And that night God fell on the scene and teenagers started getting saved. And about 10 o'clock I had to send some of the youth workers to the church and tell the adults and tell mom and dad that God was here and we couldn't leave. I helped four young men that night at the altar surrender to preach the gospel. Next day, the pastor, that morning, parents came over and started getting right with God. And finally, at 2 or 3 a.m., the pastor had showed up and he said, why don't we close this down and we'll pick it back up in church. And so they called up Sunday school and God began to move in the church through the young people's testimonies. At about 1:30 or 2 o'clock, the pastor said, let's close it down. We'll pick it back up tonight. In the evening service, we again picked it back up and went about 3 or 4 hours that evening as God was working and men were getting saved and moms and dads were getting right with God. And yet here was a man who led the whole thing that was struggling with God. I remember that night specifically that I was so afraid of giving my life to God that I knelt at the pew and I reached under the back and grabbed the pew to keep from going and giving myself wholly to the Lord. I'll tell you why. My father, pastor, when I was 5 years old, had fallen morally. My dad had a root of bitterness in his heart toward the church. He hated preachers. And I wanted my dad's approval. I wanted my dad's blessing. And God was speaking to me about preaching the gospel. And I knew I'd become the very thing my father despised. I went home that night. In the middle of the night, about 2 a.m., God woke me out of sleep and just dealing with me about all of these things. And I finally just crawled out of the side of the bed. I looked over at my wife because we had planned to get a college degree and I had and get a good job and buy a house. All of those things we had planned. With my wife there and all of our plans and my father before my eyes, my own daddy, I said, Lord, I know what I mean tonight. I see a cross. I'm just not committing my life to preach, God. I see a cross tonight. And I wholly, totally, the best I knew how. First of all, before I surrendered to preach, the best I knew how, I said, Lord, I go to Calvary and take up my cross. A week or so went by, and I began to spend private times with God. And I said, Lord, I just want to symbolize what's in my heart. I remember I went out in the woods and I worked for an hour or so and I built an altar. I found rocks in the woods and I built an altar that would be just big enough for me to lie on. And I built an altar and I said, God, I know you already know my heart, but I just want to have a symbol in my life of what you're doing in my heart and my life. And I crawled up on those rocks and I laid face down and I said, oh God, this is where I want to live my life. I offered myself to you without reservation, without hesitation. And that was the first time of brokenness in my life within those days. Put yourself in the hands of God. Let Him do the work. Many of you are asking God to do a work of humbling in your life so you can get honest. And I want to encourage you today, if you've never done it, to go present yourself to God to be marred. I want to tell you why you can do it. Notice the place, the position of the marring. Marring does sound painful, but notice the position of the marring in the hands of the potter. And oh, I tell you, you can trust God. It may be painful, but there's no more loving place to be There's no more secure place. There's no more wise place to be than to be in the hands of an almighty, loving God. In the hands of the Father. Finally, I want you to see out of the text there that it doesn't say that He makes the vessel according to what you want. You see, that's the sign of unbrokenness. You know, we give our lives to God, and we build an altar and we get up on it, and then our attitude toward God is, now, Lord, I want to do this, or I want you to do this in my life, or I want you to do that, oh God, I want you to use me this way. And the Bible is very, very clear. It's God's will, and no other way. He'll make a vessel as it pleases Him. Pleasing to Him. The way of brokenness. The way of brokenness is, again, to, by faith, put yourself, commit yourself, present yourself into the hands of God to be broken. Then submit yourself not only to be broken, but submit yourself to be made a vessel as God pleases through the whole process. Now I would just like to talk about the application of this lifestyle. My whole heart today is to challenge you to live in brokenness. Preachers, pastors especially, I talk with pastors. And generally when I'll sit and listen to a pastor and his church is divided or his life is broken, and I'll sit and listen and I'll say, God, I made all those same mistakes. The thing that I believe that is the difference is the prayer and the supplication, the prayer and supplication that comes forth out of a broken vessel. You see, a broken man is utterly dependent upon God. And many of your prayer lives declare you're not a broken man. Your lack of time in the prayer closet declares that you do not have a deep sense of your need of a holy God. I would like to talk about, I just want to show you some things. I want to talk about the application of brokenness in the home for a moment. And there's so much I could share. I want to just talk about you and your children for a moment. Proverbs 22:6. If you quote the first phrase with me, train up a child in the way he should go. You know those words, you preach them, you taught them, you studied them, you memorized them. Setting that word train one day out. The root word of the word train there is the same root word that is used in Enoch's life. The name Enoch is the same Hebrew root word as the word train. You could say Enoch a child in the way he should go. Now the word train or Enoch means the dedicated one. The dedicated one. The trained up one. The one that is dedicated and is the disciplined one. With most Hebrew words, there's not only a word definition, but there is a picture definition. I'd like to give you the picture definition of this word. The picture definition of the trained up one or the dedicated one. The picture definition is a picture that you and I not only have physical taste buds, but every human being has taste buds of the soul and of the spirit. Without exception, all of us are going to taste the world, and your children are going to taste the world. I don't care how much you try to isolate them. I don't care how much you try to protect them from the world. They're still going to taste the world, because the world is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. In our Christian school movement, we thought if we'd just get them out of the world, we can raise them to walk with God. But every child that walks into the Christian school brings the world with them in their own soul, in their own heart. They're going to taste the world. Their soul, their spirit is going to taste the world, beloved, your sons and daughters are. But your soul and spirit can also taste God. Taste of the Lord and know that He is what? Good. You see, most of our children, they're tasting the world, but they're not tasting the Lord, and they don't have anything to make a comparison with. And you see, if you've never tasted the Lord, the world tastes good, doesn't it? Many of our children, the world tastes good because they've never tasted the Lord. And the concept of the word definition of train up in the dedicated one is that if your children taste the Lord, like you're tasting in these days and getting a taste of the Lord, if your children taste the Lord and they find out that He is good, then they will dedicate themselves to the Lord. They will become the one that disciplines themselves in the Lord. They will dedicate themselves to what is good in their inner soul and spirit. So my final question as I was studying this out was, Lord, Enoch was produced. What produced him? I look back at his father, Jared, and I wanted to shout when I saw this. You know what the name Jared means? It means the prostrate one. It means the one going down. The broken one. And you see, here was a father that lived a life that could be defined as one who was prostrate before God, one who was broken before God, and he released the Spirit of God in his own home, and his son Enoch tasted that Spirit and became the dedicated one and walked with God. I've been practicing this in my own life, and man, when I saw that, I said, God, I'm dumb and I'm an idiot, but you've led me this direction, and God, I think I'll just go on home and practice it some more. So I went home that evening and I called my wife and I said, could you make sure we got some hours tonight? And so I got the kids in the living room and I said, children, I want to talk to you. My daughter was 9 years old. My son was 5 and my other son was 3 years old. This was about 10 years ago. I got them in the floor and I just said, I want to talk to you about your daddy for a few minutes. I just started off with talking to them about how much I knew they admired me and how strong I must look in their eyes. But I just began to tell them how much I needed God and how dependent I was upon the Lord. And then from there I said, I just want to confess to you. And I went through a time of confession with my children about my own sins before a holy God and my own sins as their father and how I was letting them down. And God broke my heart. And I was weeping, and my children began to weep. And finally, I just said, kids, let's pray. I got on my knees, and I began to pray. An unusual thing happened in that room. As I began to pray, my 9-year-old daughter crawled up on my right shoulder and began to sob. My 5-year-old son crawled up on this shoulder and began to weep. My little boy crawled underneath as I was prostrate. And my youngest son said, Daddy, Daddy, God's here. I sent him. And oh, beloved, all of your teaching and all of these things of no value unless the Spirit of God takes it up and anoints it to the heart of your children and puts it upon Him, upon their taste buds, and they learn of the Lord. This is where revival starts in the home, when it starts with a brokenness in your own heart. God's way, there is no other way. Jesus said, except a man cast Himself upon this stone, that's your work to present, to cast. It is the stone's job to break you, and He is able to do it lovingly, patiently, kindly, mercifully, graciously, but He will do it. Finally, just in conclusion, I'd like to talk a little bit about its application, the relationship to God. There's hundreds of things that crossed my mind, but God's really put this upon my heart. And I want to share this with you. If I may, turn to 1 John, you follow me, this final illustration or practical application of brokenness with God. With God, there's a hunger, there's a thirst. That's the passion that brokenness brings. With God, there's a helplessness. That's the dependency that brokenness brings. With God, there is a serving. With God, there is a serving. That is the joy that brokenness brings. I want to talk to you about honesty. Shattering the illusion in which you have been living is the beginning of the life. Shattering the illusion in which you have been living is the beginning of revival. This pride of self and this self-will is so deceptive, men. In 1 John there it says in verse 6, we lie and do not the truth. This deceitful illusion that we build of even our own Christian lives starts with that we lie and do not the truth. And here's where it begins. We begin to be dishonest with ourselves and with others about who we really are with God. We can even walk into revival and in the midst of where God's working and have a genuine experience with the Lord and then walk back out, and this pride of self and this self-will can begin to build its own illusion of who you really are with God, and you begin to lie and do not the truth. You begin to practice a lifestyle of lying to yourself and lying to God. You begin to build a spiritual illusion, but it is a spiritual lie. Then the process continues in 1 John in verse 8. We deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. We practice the lie long enough until we believe the lie ourselves. And we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. We believe it ourselves. And then finally there, in verse 10, we make Him a liar. All this leads us to a place where when God comes to show us our sin and our real selves, we say, not so, Lord. Not so, Lord. As Harold shared in the early days of our church, God just expanded and it grew. And there were many good things there, and yet there was the flesh in the midst of that, and people were coming with many various reasons. The church was growing, and you know, in America, when things get to growing, people come in, so don't get so excited if your church is growing. Get excited in the Lord. So I was being asked to go and preach in conferences like this and do revivals in the church, and I was glad to go do so. And one day I was hauled up by the Satyricans to Canada, and the youngest man that ever preached in the Canadian Revival Fellowship, and I stood and preached, and they had to open up a third and a fourth prayer room, and God's anointing and praises began to go from the podium, and I'd carry a series of tapes, and before it was over, they had sold hundreds and hundreds of that series of tapes, and then the Satyricans asked me to stay and speak to the entire revival leadership. And I stayed, and at the end of that, these men of God and this revival leadership, my wife was with me, and they said, we'd like to lay our hands on you. We believe God has a unique purpose for your life. And they laid their hands on me and prayed over me, and I went back to the room, and I said, honey, we got to stop. I'm so glad God had me say that. I thank God He had me say that. I believe if I hadn't said that to God, I would have been a broken man in sinful ways, not in God's ways. I told my wife, I said, honey, we're going to go home. I'm canceling out all my engagements, and I'm not going to speak again until God gives me the freedom. Because, honey, I'm not doing so well. Internally, pride is just reaping up in me, and ambition and all of that, God. And I didn't build an illusion of myself. And I went home and began to allow God to strip the illusion away. And there are some men here that were with me in those years. And I didn't know all of what God was doing, but I want to tell you now, men, that were around me, you may not have known either, but it was God. God had committed Himself to my commitment. I had presented myself to God, not only to be broken, but to go through a lifestyle of brokenness, and He was committed to me. Amen. The man that I had honored in our church, the same day that took place in Canada, the very same day. Walked into our church staff, sat down with one after the other. He said, I've come to see Brother Al. God has sent me here to see Brother Al. Well, I wasn't there. He ought to have known then he wasn't a prophet. But he thought he was. And I'll tell you what he was. He was a man that had said in meetings like this, And he had experienced honesty and some confession and times of weakening, but he never was broken. So he began to sit down one with one staff after the other staff, and he said, "You know, I'm just not sure about Brother Al." Even to one staff, he said, "You know, sometimes I even wonder if he's saved." "Well, if he'd have talked to me, I'd have been honest. Sometimes I wondered if I was saved." But I thank God. You know what God was doing? God had taken in my own church, and he was stripping me of the illusion that I had allowed to be built up. It was a lie. It was truth in it, but it was a lie. I'm telling you, men, if you want to meet God in revival, you must be broken. You must allow God to shatter this illusion that you have. In closing, and I'll just read these. This is the sum of all that we've said. By faith, allow God to shatter the illusion in which you've been living. Really, that's what it takes for salvation. A man has to have that illusion that he's been living in shattered. By faith, confess pride and deceit. Agree with God about it. Pride and deceit are bedfellows. Where one rests, the other also rests. There's pride in your life, and then there's deceit. There is deceit, there is pride. They sleep together. Present yourself for brokenness, an initial brokenness, if you've never done that. And if you have done it, then present yourself to God daily for an ongoing brokenness of the inner man to be marred. Prepare your heart to trust God, to obey God, to wait upon God. He shall bring it to pass. Wait in a patient spirit. Wait upon God in a passionate spirit. Wait upon God in a pursuing, hungering spirit. Wait upon God in a pure spirit. Wait upon the Lord. Commit yourself to other men in this process. Commit yourself to your mate in this process. And then commit yourself and prepare yourself to be a solitary man. There are times that God will pull you along by yourself to do this work, continuing your heart. We've heard a lot about Evan Roberts. I think this story to be true. Evan Roberts hungered for God, and he walked one day to go to a conference like this back in his day. He got there the next morning, and the preacher that he'd heard so much about preaching didn't seem to be moved very much. He only was going to have the opportunity to stay a day. That night, the preacher stood up, and the subject that he preached on had been us, O God. Bend us, O God. He would preach to the needs of man, and then he would say, "O God, bend us." And Evan Roberts, God caught him up in God's dealing with his own life, and he forgot that other men were present in the meeting. Evan Roberts stood up in the middle to go walk down the aisle, forgot that others were present. And he fell on his knees halfway down the aisle and he cried out, "O God, don't bend us. Bend me, O God. Bend me, O God." And that revival that started in his own heart was a river that ever flowed until it swept wells. Today again, if you've never gone to God, the potter, presented yourself to him to be marred, because you are learning to despise this old will of yours, this old covetous, selfish nature. And I encourage you to do so. If you've done that, then learn it wasn't a one-time process. It's a lifetime work of God. Daily keep getting yourself built.
God bless you for listening to the preaching of His Word. You may leave us a message by pressing 99. To hear information about our Saturday morning Bible study, press 88. To find out how to listen to a church service at Ephrata Christian Fellowship, press 77. To hear the menu for this topic again, please stay on the line. To listen to any other message in this topic, press the appropriate extension number now.